Hey, Martin.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
I just saw your proposal for the DIP,
Yeah,
or how would you call it? DIP, or
yeah, the dip, yeah. Yeah, I did.
Okay.
I thought it was just something to start talking about. Yeah, it was not initially the direction I was thinking about going with things, but I've been thinking about it for the last few days. I don't know, I couldn't get this idea out of my head. And though it sounds a lot like things I've heard from Tom Cramer and some other folks, but
Well, I mean, I just had a brief look on it, and but I think it is it right? It somehow goes away from the idea of having a permanent development team towards having, yeah, more granular, fine granular contractors or something like that.
yeah, and I don't think the two ideas are mutually exclusive, but I feel like this is more of like a surgical, like time-bound development effort that doesn't, something like development of a single feature, or maybe not something as large as like a whole module or something, but if there's like a specific thing that needs to be done in a specific time period, it seems like this model would work well for that. And I think you could also probably could have the permanent development team and have something else going on at the same time. But this seems like something that could provide an outlet for the community to interface with contractors, using the Folio organization as kind of a conduit for that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. This is more or less, I think this is more or less the way that is happening right now already, you know. I'm just that it's not the folio.org that signs the contract, but certain libraries or whatever. So this is mainly the, or I think this is the main difference, isn't it?
I agree, yeah.
And well, of course, because it's folio.org that signs, they have the we have this process of the council's endorsing the proposal. I mean, this is
Yeah, so
not the case
yeah,
for
the
other efforts.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Like this idea is intended to kind of bolster the authority of the councils and keep them involved in the development process. And also, like I because you're exactly right. Like, a lot of the development that has gone on has kind of gone on under this model, but off to the side. And I feel like in general that that's had kind of a dampening effect on the authority of the councils. So I guess this is kind of a way of like kind of putting the folio governance model kind of at the center of development. It also could be more simple, I think, and it might allow organizations to pool their resources more effectively, if there was like kind of a standardized model for doing that.
I mean, of course, the council's endorsing a proposal will only be necessary for money that comes from the council or from the community. If there's just a smaller group that agrees to finance something, they wouldn't be bound to that. They just ha can have their own council process, so to speak.
Yeah, that's true.
But
People, there's nothing keeping people from just doing their thing on the side. I was hoping that the Folio organization could kind of act as like a broker for resources. So yeah, the resources would go to the Folio organization that would then distribute it at.
I mean, this, even if the part with the council or some other part is not necessary for other in other situations or constellations, I think it's a good recipe or template for doing setting up a development process, especially for the I think to have a clear plan of what has to be done or what should be done. And especially I think of the last points, like sunsetting a module or some efforts, which we also, well, we had the discussion that there's no idea about how to get this done.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it also, yeah, it's exactly, yeah, standardizing the process makes sure that all the important things to think about are being thought about before development happens. Like for instance, the technical scope and impact of the process that it'd be good to kind of have an area for the council, the technical council, to kind of comment on that. It's user fit, its impact on the roadmap. It seems like a good thing to ensure that the development that's happening is happening in the context of that kind of iterative feedback from the councils.
I mean, I think it's only the two of us today.
Yeah,
Maybe. I don't know.
it looks like it.
I saw that Charlotte is on vacation this week, I think she said. At least. And Maccabee sent a notice that he can't come, so I don't
Yeah.
know what Jen is coming. What do you want to say? I mean, it also seems to me that this is more or less all parts of what you described are already respected somehow in our current process, in the way that we evaluate or guide the modules through the councils or development efforts. But this is more, I think, having such a document would be very good because it just integrates the different processes that we apply at the moment, but rather that and that are rather loosely connected. I mean, the community councils, they collect these memorandums of understanding, and we do our evaluation or guidance, or I don't remember what we agreed to call it, and then the technical evaluation. But it's, I mean, it's not really, tied together and having a document that clearly says, or lists all these recommendations, or steps. It would make the things more clear, and you would have, I mean, if it's just 2 pages, it would be good to just to give away as a cheat sheet. Because the process at the moment is not very transparent, maybe, for developers.
Yeah.
So it would definitely be good to have, even for non-community funded projects.
Sounds like, because one of the things that you think you were saying in our last meeting, though it was at this point so long ago, I'm having a hard time remembering, but it seemed like you were saying that it would be good to describe the current process. And yeah, I think you're right that this does seem to kind of maybe an attempt in some senses to codify and adjust slightly the current process. So I guess one of the two reasons why I thought about this, one is that it seemed like an easier thing to put in place, as like a first step into kind of officially structured community development because it's so close to what's going on. It seemed like a good place to start, I guess. And then the second thing is that there are several different development efforts that are kind of looming that I would love to see Folio governance kind of engage with. And if they don't, I know that people are going to, just do this on the side. I know that they're probably going to engage with these development efforts without co community governance. So I was thinking that kind of what got my wheels turning is I'm like, well, it would be good if we had a defined process that could bring all the players together into kind of, one endeavor.
I'm not sure what you are. What kinds of efforts you are thinking about and that are looming around?
Well, a lot of it around Eureka and what we do, what we do in light of the fact that we're having a hard time running Eureka, and what it does seem like between now and the time that we eventually run Eureka, some sort of development effort is going to happen in order to kind of get us, keep us on Folio. Whether it's the ramps and support, or there's been talk of Okapi, an Okapi release of some flower, but whatever it is, it's going to require development effort, and it would be good, to be able to pool resources and see that development or ha happen without putting too much of a burden on any particular area of our community.
So you would also think about, scripting and tooling around hosting Folio, for example. And I don't know, scripting and tooling for reporting that is outside of Folio and things like this.
It's like other possible development efforts.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's really something that has been, bugging me that we don't have a list or a directory of development efforts that are just not directly inside Folio that but for support of Folio or local enhancements, things like this. Always, I see that there are a lot of, for example, for printing, there are a lot of solutions around, but none is like, I mean, you really have to dig into the wiki and other material to find that there are solutions, and we do not have some kind of, centralized way where we can document such efforts.
That's such a good idea. You could create like some sort of a catalog of like Folio tools and integrations or something like that, where every organization could just kind of say, look, this is how we're dealing with it. And I don't know if you're talking about printing print slips,
For
but
pig slips, transit slips, and things like this. I mean, this it's a huge thing in Germany, because till now almost all libraries rely on that, and very heavily. And there's no solution integrated into Folio. So, I mean, there's also no solution in ALMA and OCLC, WMS, and so on. But I mean, there's no solution in Folio, and that's what we are having. And so, just like every library and network are trying to get, to make up their own solution, and this is just not optimal. And there are also, I mean, also in the US, I think some libraries have come up with printing solutions, and so.
I just messed up one of our business processes the other day, just out of ignorance, because there was a report for books that were awaiting pickup, and we had this report in place, and I was wanting to remove move all of our reporting into Power BI, We had these like custom web pages that would have the report. So we moved the awaiting pickup report into Power BI, and it looked great. All the data was the same, but the form factor of the report when printed totally changed because now it's like, it looks like an Excel spreadsheet. But when before, like each entry was kind of big. And what I didn't realize at all, which was this was just me screwing up big time, was that they were printing this report and cutting it out and using those as slips, in the books. And so when I swapped the report out, the folks at the desk, go to pull it up and learn, we can't use this. And it's like, we get this pile of books stacking up before I can switch it back.
That's what people are afraid of here, at least in my library.
We use Spinomatic, which is a Ex Libris product, but we built a connector between Folio and Spinomatic that allows us to use it to do our spine label printing.
I remember that. I didn't remember that it was you that whom did it, but I remember that I have seen it somewhere.
But yeah, you're right. I mean, there's just tons of stuff like that. It would be great to, and if we had a list, it would also help us identify the gaps, things that don't exist that probably should exist.
And I think, I mean, I would consider this also some kind of community-driven or directed development. I mean, it's not really development, but it's supporting the development. Just like the developer advocate would be some kind of support position. I think this, I think it this somehow goes together or belongs together. And then, I mean, for something like this, a document or directory or whatever catalog, you wouldn't need developers. That would be maybe the greatest advantage. Because cataloging these tools, you don't need to be a developer.
It's a really cool idea, especially if it was something where you could like self-report, like I could just go there and just say, create a new integration or create a new tool, and it would just end up on the list. I can describe the stuff that we have at TAMU, and if we allowed people to self-report on the tools they've created, I could see that list growing. And yeah, and before we built anything, it would be great to go to it and be like, well, what does everyone else have? Do they have something that we could start with? Or, all right,
So,
well.
this has been an idea going around in my head for some time now, and I really didn't know how to start it. But yeah, maybe I just should get it going. We recently within our library network here, we just made up a small catalog of scriptings and apps and so on that we developed for ourselves, because we had done so much, so we didn't know what has been done already and whatnot. So scaling this up to the international community, you just can't have, I mean, you can't have your eyes everywhere. And
It's a great idea. All right. Well, since it's just the two of us, and all I really had prepared to talk about was this proposal, but I put it on the channel so we can probably have some commentary about it asynchronously. And I think I put like 10 weeks of this meeting down. So maybe we'll have more productive conversations with everybody about it ne next
Yeah.
week, I suppose.
Okay, then.
Unless is there anything else that you were interested in digging into? I don't mind chatting about stuff.
I don't know. I think you said or posted something like that you followed some discussions, and because of that you came up with this kind of proposal that is different from what you wanted or imagined before. So I wondered, have there been discussions since our last meeting or so? I haven't heard of anything, I think, and
So
I also hadn't had the time for digging around. So is there any news on that?
Are you and forgive me, I just don't recall, but back in, I guess it was maybe April or May, we had a self-hosting implementers group meeting. Was that something that you were a part of?
No, I wasn't.
Okay. Well, some of the folks, think your library was represented there.
Well, our library networks surely was, but I'm not that much concerned with hosting our folio. So that's we have a network headquarters, and they are doing the hostings. I'm at the library, so I'm not concerned with that so much. I don't know if you know Edwin from the community council. I mean, he just rotated
Yeah,
out, but he was
he
there, I
was
think.
certainly there. So that's the context that I'm talking about. We Alexis Mannheim and Kirsten and I are kind of coordinating that group, and it seems really important just because there's a lot of, there are all sorts of different ways to kind of divide up the folio community, but one way that divides it into two pieces are folks who host folio commercially and folks that just run it for themselves, self-host it. And I do think that because EBSCO, is the commercial entity and they're so large, I think that commercial perspective has been very well represented in, in folio lifetime. And for whatever reason, the self-hosters, there's a lot of them. I mean, all you folks from Germany, Sweden, there's only
Yeah,
two
I mean,
in the US.
I think I said it last time or before that I think from a strictly legal point of view, the most of the German libraries maybe do not count as self-hosters because they are not self-hosting. Their library headquarters or some other kind of legal entities are hosting it actually, and this may be, I mean, you can call a German library self-hosters because it's not a commercial entity that hosts it, but from at least from German legal standpoint, this is debatable.
That's a really good point. And Texas A&M is potentially on a similar precipice because we certainly host it for ourselves, but we're in talks with our library system to maybe start hosting for the other Texas A&M libraries, it's a system of schools, so there's a
Yeah,
Texas A&M
I
university
recently saw
system.
it. So it's not one school, Texas A&M, but it's I don't know, 10, 20 schools or so.
About
And
12, 13, something like that.
they're independent, more or less independent, or it's some kind of federation or.
They have a shared endowment, so from a money perspective, money gets kind of funneled out, to these schools. I believe that is the case, and so there is a centralized organization, but it's pretty lean, it's pretty s small, and but there's a certain amount of conduit for resource sharing, but between all these schools. My school, Texas A&M University College Station, is by a long shot the largest of the schools,
Okay.
and so yeah, there's just we could have some really serious cost savings across the entire system if we were to host for everybody, because we're not a commercial entity. We're not
Yeah.
looking to recoup. We're just looking to cover our bottom line. We're not looking to make a profit. So you take that profit out of there, and we could save a lot, almost a, and I've run the numbers on it, and it's looking like we could probably save about 45% across the system by, switching to us hosting. So, but if we do that, you're right. It does kind of strain that idea of self-hosting a little bit. It might be a better description to say non-commercial hosting entities or
Yeah,
something like that.
but even I mean, even in Germany, even non-commercial is, I mean, it's the point that non-commercially, what is a non-commercial institution? And this is can be this may be counterintuitive, I would say, from a legal point of view.
Yeah.
I mean, as long as we do not get into legal aspects, it doesn't matter. We can call ourselves self-hosters, and that's it, or non-commercial hosters.
Yeah, because there's at least in the US, and I'm sure it's the same in Germany, there's some very significant tax implications as to whether you're commercial or not nonprofit, not for profit.
Yeah, I mean it's the same in Germany, but regarding these non, I mean even entities that are regarded as non-profit or social profit, I don't know what to call it. I mean, that are doing things for post
Public
for the
works, the
public,
public
yeah, for the
good.
public good or so. They may even if they are recognized as that for from a tax point of view, it may be different from other legal points of views. I mean, I'm not a lawyer, so I can't really tell the difference. I just saw these some kind of court decisions that appear to be counterintuitive to what non-commercial means.
Yeah, I'm
So
trying to think.
it's
I guess in the US, the way that it works is the proprietor's ability to pull funds directly from the company. So for a nonprofit in the US, I believe the way it works is that once money goes in, you can't pull it back out directly. But it can be distributed via salaries. And I don't think in the US there are any kind of stipulations as to what those salaries are set at. So you could end up with some pretty shady situations where somebody's nonprofit, but still as an individual profiting quite a bit from the endeavor.
Yeah, or, I mean, that's also the case in Germany.
Yeah.
There have been some scandals here some
Yeah,
years ago about that.
I
Oh
can
no, okay.
say
I
at
mean,
Texas A&M that's not the case. My at least my salary does not reflect that sort of thing.
yeah, I mean, at least if you're organizing in such subgroups of the community, I think it's okay to call it like that, as long as we do not imply any legal things, then we should, yeah, have a closer look or rename things, whatever. But yeah.
Well, that was the context of the conversation was just I do think that the German library systems that are hosting us, Stanford, Sweden, that we are all going to be or have been impacted pretty significantly by Eureka and our current inability to get it up and running in a production ready
Yeah.
manner. And so, there are a lot of different ideas for how to move forward with that. But it's looking more and more like we're going to have to develop our way out of this problem. And which is fine. I mean, but it would be good if there was a convenient mechanism for us to pool our resources, because we kind of have common cause with this. If there was a good formal mechanism for us to pool our resources to accomplish this very specific, endeavor, I think that would be a good thing. So that's kind of what
Yeah.
got me thinking.
Yeah. I mean you mentioned EBSCO as driving the vendor or commercial perspective. I mean, recently with the Kane paper, they have, yeah, some kind engaged in that as well. And what is missing, and I think you said that once before, is the user or library perspective from non-commercial, how do you say that? Long enduring or entities like these governmental or half governmental universe academic structures that just have long-term perspectives, maybe, not aiming at, yeah, more or less short-term goals and income or revenue.
Yeah, do
This
you think
perspective
that?
is missing a bit, at least
Yeah.
I would agree on that.
Yeah, I think that this proposal that I just put in the chat today don't feel like is designed to address that long-term perspective necessarily. It is very focused on kind of short-term development efforts. And I do think we probably also need something in place. And I think that this is what Kayan's proposal is kind of getting at, even though I myself don't really like the general approach that they're taking. I think they're addressing a very legitimate problem that we have, which is long-term support, maintenance and long-term support. We don't have a good solution for that.
Yeah, and fundraising raising. I mean, we don't have a solution for that as well. At least as much as I know. So there's no proposal, no other proposal that is so is that down to earth as the Cain proposal.
I suppose that this DIP model could be used to fund maintenance contract for something. And I guess when I think about it, there's not really a reason why they couldn't. If your DIP, was for maintenance of a certain module or something, and there were organizations that were willing to say, all right, on a yearly, we're going to sign this MOU. This is on a yearly basis. We're going to give X amount into this bucket. And it's going to be used for maintenance of this module. And there was a contractor on the other side that's like, all right, well, we'll sign up for that. We'll take that money and we'll make sure that this thing is maintained. I guess, I don't know. What do you think? Do you think something like that could work?
Yeah, I mean, so for I'm thinking about a certain case. I mean, you know the open access app. So it has been funded by Leipzig, and now they are, I don't know if it's all settled already, but I think they are trying to fund further development but also maintenance now for another, I don't know, 3 years, 5 years, whatever. And yeah, I mean, this document or proposal would be, I mean, really much would fit the goal of, I mean, you just could go down all the steps and say, well, I want to fund maintaining open access app, and then you go all through all the steps, the councils agree and so on, and then you do it. I also think that I mean, I don't know. At the moment, this would be would occur just without including or asking the councils and or whatever. I mean, Leipzig would just go to K-INT and just make a contract for that. And it may be it, I mean I think it depends on the one crucial thing is the step where you have the folio.org signing the contract. And this may be a crucial point, because it may, I don't know, it may, for an inst if it's, at least if it's a single institution that funds it, like Leipzig, they would, maybe it would be more profitable for them to just go the direct way as before, than going, I mean, than having this circum, yeah, or this folio.org step.
Yeah,
One thing I'm thinking of is, we had, I don't know, I don't remember in which document, but we had the idea of fi having a fixed rate for developer costs. And if you apply this fixed rate and, for all kind of development that goes through folio.org, this may be disadvantages for, yeah, for institutions or vendors that do not apply these rates. I mean, if you can get the development done more or cheaper, then why go this way? Then, but, and it, I think the rates I saw, I don't remember exactly, but I think they were, even for, yeah, I mean, for German level, they were quite high, I think. So in, for example, in Germany, I think it would be the case also in, I mean, we had this Polish company that gets into Folio. And I don't know who else, but I think if you're not from the US or maybe from Sweden and maybe even from Germany, then you would have options to get this something funded cheaper than going through these official routes. And I mean,
So you
you
think
have
that
to, you have to have some kind of something to handle that, I think. I mean, I think the best way would be to have it go the official route, just as described in the proposal, so that as a community you have some, yeah, you are involved in some kind or other, some way or other, than just being, I mean, having bilateral contracts and then someone, it is announced that now this and that is funded. And maybe you have then, yeah, some racing conditions because others would have funded it as well, or whatever.
think one of the things I found attractive about this was that the contractual component can get really complicated if you have multiple entities, joining into the contract. And
Yeah.
so that seemed to me to be a reason why you wouldn't see organizations pooling their resources to get something done, because it's really best to have a legal entity, a singular legal entity, to be both ends of the contract. And so, like, if your library and my library wanted to pool our resources to do something, we might end up doing something where it's like, well, Texas A&M will sign the contract and you guys just give us an MOU, but you end up with this, like, kind
Yeah,
of very
I
complicated thing
agree.
going
I
on.
mean, this is really this disentangling some kind of strange interconnections, or yeah, and making it more transparent. I mean, the current situation is kind of a
Yeah,
bad.
and
No, I mean, I think at least I think it's really hard to get to know who funds what.
and like, if we did it this way, there would be official documentation that says, like, here's a specific development effort. It's been funded by, these folks, and it would kind of be like on the record. And to address your point about, like, kind of market forces, I think you're right. If this was the only way that the community was funding things, I could see the proposals that come back from from the developing contractors that they would maybe mark up their prices a little bit because they're like, well, you know, I mean, there's all these organizations that might, you know, might want this and might pay for it, so they might be inclined to ask for more money. But there's nothing keeping organizations from doing side deals if they don't like, you know, the proposals that come in. And, if all the proposals are up here, then I feel like organizations might be like, well, forget this. I'm just gonna, you know, deal with these guys directly and maybe get a better price. Maybe that will keep the, maybe the fact that they can do these
Yeah.
side deals will keep the prices down.
I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure if I read it correctly or interpreted it correctly. So I had the impression that the idea was that you have fixed rates. But if you should read it as a proposed rate, it would be another thing. So, I mean, if you don't, if you allow in this official process, if you allow different rates and maybe different contractual conditions whatsoever, then it wouldn't be a hindrance for going the official way. I mean, the official way should be as easy as possible, I think, so that it is taken by the people and not that you every time you try to circumvent it. Yeah,
It makes it weaker.
different, difficult.
Like I said, I'm really eager to hear what everybody thinks about it because, like you said, it's not that different than what's going on. It just kind of codifies it, and like I haven't even run this past Steven yet. I was actually going to his office yesterday to try to find him to like be like, hey, what do you think of this idea? You know, but I never bumped into him, so. I really don't even know, like, or my boss. I haven't shown it to him, so I don't even know, like, what, you know, what the general, I, you know, response is to this idea. But I don't know. It seemed worth at least putting it out there and seeing what people thought.
That's okay.
Anyway.
That's great. So we will discuss it next time.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, fine.
All right, Martin.
Okay.
Thanks for chatting and.
Yeah.
Yeah, best of
Have
luck.
a nice day.
You too. Bye.
Bye.